Welcome to Radar Contact by Fox ATM, the podcast for the air traffic management community, bringing global ATM on your radar. You're identified.
Capacity has always been an important topic in ATM, especially runway capacity used before COVID to become kind of a bottleneck. Then came COVID and things were different. But now the focus comes on capacity again. And this will be the topic of today's episode, specifically runway capacity and discussing time-based separation. For that, my guest is Sébastien De Stichter, who is project manager at LVNL. My name is Vincent Lambercy, and this is one more episode of the Radar Contact podcast. Sébastien, welcome. Before starting, can you please introduce yourself to our audience, what you've been doing so far? What is your position at LVNL?
Good morning, Vincent. Thank you for having me. Nice to be on the podcast. Thank you for the introduction. My name is Sébastien De Stichter. I'm Dutch. I'm a project manager at LVNL, working on a number of projects in the systems and infrastructure domain. One of the projects was the introduction of the time-based separation at Schiphol, which we'll discuss. I started at LVNL just before the COVID pandemic hit. I was very lucky to make that switch just before. In the beginning of 2020, I started. At that moment, I returned from working abroad for over 10 years. I had a number of positions before moving to LVNL. So yeah, let's say in short, I attained my master's degree in aerospace engineering in 2005, started my career in a small aviation consultancy in The Hague, or at least by then it was small. It was called 270. You had the managing director, Ruud Ummels, in season two on your podcast. He was employee number seven. I think I was employee number nine. And I think in hindsight, that was a great start in my career. So it was a small company, large ambitions. I worked there for 5 years with various clients in various places of the world. And I learned a lot. Solidified also my love for aviation and air traffic management. Then my wife got an offer in South Africa. So I decided to move with her to South Africa, try to get into ANSP of South Africa. It was difficult, then ended up in a very small specialized company dealing with satellite tracking of assets, trains, planes and automobiles using satellite only, not depending on terrestrial infrastructure, which is nearly not available in sub-Saharan Africa. Interesting peoples and skills. I was there as a operations manager and doing a lot of analytics of all the data we got in. Interesting mix of technology and skills. We had microelectronics, embedded programming, hardware design, back-end, front-end web development. Also there, I learned a lot. Then I was asked by the Max Planck Institute for Biological Cybernetics, something completely different in southern Germany, to work as a new research group leader in the development of motion drive algorithms for simulators based on human perception models. Also there, very multidisciplinary, working with neuroscientists, roboticists, mathematicians, psychologists, aerospace engineers, working with a lot of real-time systems. Very interesting. And then before moving to LVNL, I had a commercial and technical role at Telespazio, which was a company based in Darmstadt near Frankfurt, who originally was working mostly in the space domain, an industry company developing ground systems. And when I came there, I immediately saw that there is a lot of analogy, especially on the technical side of things, between the systems used in the space industry for controlling satellites and the air traffic control systems we use to make ATC possible. And there I ended up in a business development role, did that for 7 years, quite successful. The company really branched out into aviation and ATM. But for me personally, after 7 years being too far away from the subject matter, in my opinion, I really was looking for a role where I could really also get closer to the subject matter again. And that's how I ended up at LVNO.
Well, knowing you, I would not call it ending up. I'm sure you will bounce around and in different positions at LVNL. And it's really nice to see people with a multiple careers and multiple aspects and not just, you know, focused on just one thing. So congratulations for all of that. I think it's interesting. We both mentioned COVID in the intros, because the subject for today will be time-based separation approaches, and we will come to that in a second. Was that on the menu already for you when you got hired at LVNL, and did they get that through, or was that one of the possible things? Because it's very interesting to see INS and NSP at the beginning of COVID starting such a project and keep it through it.
Yeah. So I think the project started before I joined. I took it over, and at that point, I think in 2019 it started. COVID was definitely not on the map. Then of course, COVID did become an issue, and it did account for some delay in the project, because it was more difficult to get people together. It was also more difficult to get people available for training. So yeah, on the one hand, you're trying to get a system in place which will squeeze just the last bit of toothpaste out of the toothpaste bottle, so to say, in terms of capacity, and you're in a complete slump when it comes to volume. I think at that point, we were past the point of no return, and knowing that aviation will always rebound, there was no moment that this project was ever going to be considered to be shelved. So we carried on, and we also made use of that extra time to make some final tweaks, some further tests, do some more elaborate shadow mode testing. And I think we made very well use of that time. And then after the whole Corona mess ended, and very soon thereafter, we actually managed to get the system into operation in January 2023.
Yeah, great decision by LVNL leadership not to just scrap that project.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let us go into TBS itself. So normally, to put that in very simple words, aircraft are separated by a given distance depending on their wake turbulence category and so on. And with time-based, this is one of the things that change. Can you try to explain that change in a, let's say, not too expert way at first?
Yeah, so with time-based separation, what you are trying to improve is your performance, especially in headwind conditions. So if you are spacing aircraft at a fixed distance from each other and you have a lot of headwind, then the interval in which aircraft cross the threshold, it decreases. So what with TBS, what you try to do is, irrespective of the wind conditions, try to get an equivalent time interval, which you would have in a no wind condition with distance-based separation in place, so that you mitigate this effect of headwind. And especially for Schiphol being close to the coast, you will have almost always wind. So this is definitely improving things. Now, of course, for an air traffic controller, that makes it quite difficult, because a distance on a radar screen, you can very easily observe and control towards. And here you have a more dynamic system where change is also better based on the wind conditions. So for this concept to work, to space aircraft in approach using time-based, you would need to support the air traffic controller with additional cues. And that is what the TBS system, amongst others, provides.
So you have two things in place here. You have one TBS system who does calculations, and we will come to that in a minute. But you also have to change and update your radar display screen, correct?
Correct. So in the end, the air traffic controller is provided with support by means of indicators on the radar screen, telling the air traffic controller what the optimal distance is between a leader and a follower aircraft. And that is determined by one of three constraints. It's the biggest, of course, is wake turbulence, which we will definitely talk about, because it's probably the factor which makes it difficult for the system also to be certified. Then we have the effect of radar minima that always needs to be respected. And last but not least, we have the cases where heavy aircraft need more time to vacate the runway. And also that constraint has an impact on the separation between aircraft approaching the runway. And that is indicated that the intelligent approach system, the NATS system, which allows for time-based separation, all takes this into account and then presents the air traffic controller with indicators to help him or her vector the aircraft and sequence them correctly.
Okay, so we have on one side the new server you bought from NATS. That's also something we will touch in a second. And you had to adjust the HMI.
Correct.
What were the high-level goals that you got from LVNL management? Well, was it something like, with that project, you need to squeeze two or three, four aircraft more per hour? Or was it go for it and try to see, because the whole approach is pretty new. I mean, it's in operation at Heathrow and a few others.
Yeah.
But did you have a real hard number to reach, or was the objective to increase capacity?
No, I think there was definitely as part of the whole ex ante analysis before getting this project running, and also the whole business case, of course, expected an increase in capacity, or at least in terms of throughput on the runway, especially in adverse weather conditions. So what you now see, because in the original situation, you would lose capacity with deteriorating meteorological conditions. That would cause delays, and delays would, of course, then also result in costs on the airline side. And to especially improve the loss of capacity, which you had, let's say, on the strong headwind conditions or worsened meteorological conditions, these wanted to be improved. So to improve the sustainability of our, let's say, declared capacity. Yeah, of course, based on simulations, there was an estimate made on what the effect was. And that was then the basis also for the business case to greenlight this project to be realized.
Okay. One side question here. I know this was not planned, but it's an interesting one. Was it a project purely by LVNL, or was the airport and was maybe KLM as the dominant airline in Amsterdam also involved, or was it really just purely LVNL?
No, it was purely LVNL. Of course, we have a very good relationship with our stakeholders, the airport, KLM as the main carrier, but also the other airlines. They were informed early on what we were going to do. And there was a lot of effort put towards, keeping them in the loop. In the end, for both the airport and the airlines, not much changes. In the end, our performance in providing ATC services improves, but from a procedure point of view for the pilot, nothing changes. And the airport in the end, airport and airlines would simply reap benefits, but there's no active participation needed other than their buy-in.
Okay. So now coming back to that server that you bought from NATS, and they probably had to do some adjustments. The TBS concept is partly realized using artificial intelligence. Can you tell us a bit more about this part of the thing?
Yeah, I don't know whether I should call it artificial intelligence. What it is, it is a system that is trained on a lot of surveillance data to train a model to measure the deceleration profiles of aircraft in different wake turbulence categories, such that when the aircraft are put on the approach fix, then the compression towards the runway is such that when you cross the runway, you still maintain the adequate amount of separation. Maybe as a sidestep, when we introduced RECAT, when we introduced time-based separation, we also made a switch from the ICAO wake turbulence categories to the RECAT EU categories. That allowed us for a more fine grain categorization of the aircraft, and also, let's say, a better distinction by the intelligent approach system from NATS to calculate these compressions. So the system is trained. That's all delegated to NATS. So we don't have any oversight on that. That is also a bit of a black box for us, but we understand that it's trained on surveillance data, then profiles are being calculated, and then to validate that model, the surveillance data is simulated using the IA system to validate that all safety criteria are met. So it's a tuning of the model. I wouldn't call it AI. I think once the system is tuned, it's completely deterministic. Otherwise it would be, I think, very hard to validate if you can't, if there's always a risk of AI doing something that you do not expect. At the same time, now that the system is operational, it's continually monitored to see how the aircraft that are approaching Schiphol, how they behave with respect to the calculated profiles, which are at the basis of this system, on the one hand to verify that all safety criteria are met, but also maybe to understand maybe there's a room for improving efficiency to further decrease separation between leader and follower. And that is an ongoing process, and that is not something that you simply observe and then implement. That would require a real change process to get that implemented. So that's not done every other week, but on a regular basis, a number of times a year.
AI or machine learning has been a topic recurrently on our podcast. I mean, we had discussions a few weeks ago with people from Charlie. We had Andrew Taylor from NATS on Digital Towers. And what you said is very interesting, because it is a black box, not in the sense of because AI, it is a black box in that case, but because you take it over from NATS and they probably don't give you all the secrets and the details. But this is always the same thing. When you have a black box, first you want to look into that because you like ATM. But secondly, The regulators are typically not so happy with black boxes. At which stage did you brought your regulator on board, and how did they react to the project?
So we have a good relationship with our regulator. So we have them take part in the whole process of us getting this system in Schiphol. The good thing, I guess, is that, although it's maybe quite an innovative system, it's not novel. So the system, I think, was developed by NATS starting 2012. It was part of also supported by CESAR. They did a lot of work on the whole wake turbulence situation, doing LIDAR measurements of, I think, over 100,000 approaching flights under various conditions. And that already, building forward on that already takes away probably the biggest concern when decreasing separation, either by moving to the ReadCat categories or by switching to time-based separation, is the effect of the amount and the severity of the encountered wake turbulence events. So for getting the system approved by the Dutch NSA, a safety argument was based, first of all, on the existing ReCat EU safety case, but also then on the TBS safety cases that NATS presented to the UK CAA for the operation at London Heathrow. So when we went to our NSA, we made a safety case argument on a so-called goal-structured notion. That means that we build on existing safety cases, then in addition, take on board the 7 years of operational experience that NATS had, as well as making an analysis how the Schiphol situation compared to the London situation, and then to what degree then that is comparable. And of course, NATS helped us very much with that. And that, I think, made our life quite easy, and also gave the supervisory authority a lot of confidence that we were not acting like cowboys, let's just say.
Yeah. So you mentioned that a couple of times already, and that's something I'd like to dive into a bit. How was the organization between NATS and LVNL? Who was responsible for which part there?
So NATS in the end is a supplier of the intelligent approach product and system. So they are ultimately responsible to provide LVNL with a solution that met the requirements LVNL put forward and delivers on the promises that they made. They were our single point of contact. So they were responsible for the project management on their side. and of course brought a lot of operational expertise on board. So they had a lot of ETCOs also. They helped in creating the Schiphol ConOps, which is of course a derivative of the ConOps at London Heathrow. They worked with our air traffic controllers in simulator trials to, you know, get them familiarized with the system, get also help us get buy-in, and supporting the development of the safety case, for instance. Of course, NETS is not a system company. So they rely on a technology partner, Leidos, who in the end do the development and maintain the system and provide adaptations and custom integrations, of course. So that is a very important partner. And then the third party involved also, under, let's say, subcontracting by NETS, is Think Aviation Consulting, and they worked very much with tuning this model, the so-called ORD profiles, optimal runway delivery profiles, to tailor that to the Amsterdam situation. For LVNL, we were pretty much then responsible for everything else, which is a huge amount of things that we need to do to have such a change in place. So of course the technical side of things, getting the systems then also, let's say, physically integrated in our test acceptance production environment, but also in our training simulator. In the end, we are responsible for the safety case, so we need to build that, ensure getting approval. We need to design and execute a whole training program to get the air traffic controllers trained and confident to work with the system. Also technical training. So we have first, second, third line technical support staff that need to maintain the system. We need to communicate to the shareholder, to the stakeholders, airport, airline, as mentioned before. We need to prepare the whole monitoring of the system post operation. So we have ongoing calculation of KPIs, monitoring this, the system, the operational performance. I think that in a nutshell, I probably forgot many, many aspects, is how the work was divided between the parties.
Did you feel some kind of a difference, maybe in spirit or in the way of working, because NATS is an ANSP versus working with a pure system provider? Was it a bit easier? Was it harder in some cases? Was it just different? Or are they acting like any industry partner?
It's a bit of both, I guess. So, first, I think what, especially for such a big change that we did, I think it is absolutely great to have NETS as a supplier of a system, because they are looking at this from a very operational perspective. They have the ETCOs part of the project who talk to our ETCOs, you know, having air traffic controllers who have used the system extensively, who are involved in the development of the system, sitting shoulder to shoulder with our air traffic controllers in a simulator, discussing, working with the system in practice is something that is very hard, I think, for an industry partner to provide. And that is something which helped us, help me as a project manager also to get this buy-in in the end, the operational acceptance of that this system is something, you know, that will help us with what we're trying to achieve, and this will work. I was super happy with that, and not only in convincing the controllers, but also working with our safety department for getting the whole safety case together. That's definitely a step up from working with an industry partner. On the commercial side, I think maybe we are the second client having an installation of this system outside of the UK. We were just beat by Toronto by a couple of months. And I think there maybe, NETS is not so well, prepared yet. Of course, as a client, we have many, many wishes, and you would see my experiences from an industry partner, there would be more eagerness and responsiveness to get this done. Whereas we felt a bit more hesitation there. But all in all, we got it working in very good spirits and we're very happy. So, I'm happy that we did this together with Nets.
I appreciate you being open and honest about that. And it's probably part of being Dutch. I know Dutch people tend to be very direct in positive as in negative. And I'd like to use that a bit. There were some people at LVNL that posted on LinkedIn about the starting of using TBS approach as being, quote, the smoothest transition they have ever experienced, unquote. Was it really that nice and that easy, or were there some rough patches along the way?
And once we took the system operationally, things indeed went very smooth. So when we started in the morning of January 26, when the system was put into operation, we had perfect meteorological conditions to test the system. On the one hand, on the other hand, it was it was stormy weather. There was strong westerly winds. All traffic had to be arriving on one runway rather than two. Gusts up to 40 knots, and so it was really putting the system through a test. We had quote unquote prepared for the worst. We had first, second, third line NATS, LIDLs, NATS air traffic controllers in rotation, planned for 48 hours to deal with anything unexpected. But it is true. In the end, we were pretty much twiddling thumbs and high fiving each other because the system was working was working very well. So no real rough patches whatsoever. Of what we expected and what we did see is in the beginning a number of pilots checking in the first days through RT just to verify separation because getting TBS and then RECAT in, that that meant that in some cases where normally separation would be 5 nautical miles, all of a sudden it's down to 3.5. We had a couple of cases where they were just confirming that everything's according to plan. So that was, other than that, we had one case in the first 48 hours, which is maybe funny to say, which was not really a rough patch by any means, but we did have that the system unexpectedly during a low traffic volume switched back to distance-based mode. That was a bit of a head-scratcher, but within 5 minutes it was determined that this correct system behavior, and maybe I can shortly dive into it because we have probably the audience here enjoys probably also the details here. So for time-based separation to work, of course you need to have knowledge also on the wind conditions on the final approach path. And for that, the intelligent approach system uses mode S downlinked information of aircraft flying towards the runway to create a wind model. And in various segments between 8 miles out and the threshold, wind is assessed and the wind model is populated. And during the night, we expect traffic to be so low that the wind model becomes still, the information is old, the system says I can't work with that, so I will switch back to distance-based operation. Normal procedure, part of the way of working with the system. However, you expect that in the night and not during, let's say, low traffic situations. And what we did see in this one occasion is that because there was such low traffic, ATCOs were vectoring aircraft into short final just to save a couple of track miles. And then this last segment, 8 nautical miles out, was not populated with mode as wind information. And then, of course, if one segment doesn't have any up-to-date wind information, then the system, the wind model becomes still and the system moves back into distance-based mode. At that moment, the supervisor on duty was one of the air traffic controllers, which was part of the project, immediately thought, that's probably because of that, and then instructed the ATCO, the next aircraft, to just go in long. And, of course, the system moved back to time-based mode. And that, I think, shows that these unexpected things can happen. These are typically not the things that you test because it's just the way people work. It's not necessarily the standard procedure. But that gave us a bit of a chuckle. But in the end, it's now solved with a briefing. So if it happens, everybody understands why and how it's resolved. So that's a bit of an anecdote I can share with you.
Well, that's the difference between simulations and real life, I guess, and totally recognize this kind of things. I realize you mentioned the 26th of January, I think, so you are almost 6 months in.
Yep.
What is your look back at the operation for now? Do you have ideas how much capacity you want? I mean, Schiphol is not the simplest airport ever. You have, I think, 6 runways, if I'm not mistaken, a different concept of operations. Do you see now the actual benefits of the system in terms of capacity?
When it comes to the capacity during, let's say, strong headwind conditions, there is undoubtedly a big benefit that we see. So we see cases where we handle 3 to 6 aircraft an hour more than we used to. So that is great news for the general sustainability of our capacity at the airport. For some people, they say 3 to 6 landings an hour. How is that great? Maybe marginal to some, but I can tell you, especially under those conditions, those operational conditions, where airlines suffer, bigger delays. This is a huge, huge benefit in terms of cost savings for the airlines, punctuality. So there we see definitely benefits. If this means that we are also going to be able to increase our nominal capacity, I think it's too early to say. It's very hard to make an A-B comparison because you don't have a day in 2022, which is exactly the same as a day in 2023. We now have a midterm evaluation report, which came in after 6 months, looking at a whole range of performance areas, safety, efficiency, environment, looking at initial approach speeds, final approach speeds, number of turbulence encounters, throughputs, use of the secondary runway, etc. But I expect this will take probably another half year for us to be confident to increase the capacity. But the good thing is that everything is as expected in the ex ante, in line with the ex ante analysis. Maybe even in these conditions, maybe even better than expected in the strong headwind conditions. So the confidence is there, and I think everybody is very happy with the system. I don't think people want to go back.
Sorry, 3 to 6 aircraft more an hour sounds like a lot to me, at least, even if it's a multiple runway airport. Now, before going in our classical 5 and 50 years question, I have one more. There is a slightly more complex version of the system that is called pairwise TBS, where you move basically from the RICAT EU separations to a very more specific, almost aircraft type specific version of it. I've learned some things from Eurocontrol and others. You have something like a 96x96 matrix telling you if my leader is that type of aircraft and my follower is that other type of aircraft, you can squeeze a bit more out of it. Is it something you are looking at, or are you fully happy with the RICAT EU version?
If there's a potential to further improve things, I think we're generally very open to that. So we now have the current system half a year. I think we will have it still for a while just to further work with that. We know, of course, that the product roadmap from NATS for the intelligent approach system does have this pairwise system on the roadmap. And I think it's coming also fairly soon, course of next year or the year thereafter. We will need to see. It's too early to say. They claim that it does have benefits. So you mentioned one or two aircraft an hour more. With everything, there's a cost benefit analysis, at the basis of all the changes that we make, which is not only about capacity and money, but also the change itself. The change itself, is a quote unquote disruption in many ways. And I think we have many other things at LVNL also, which are in the pipeline. So it's up to the management to decide when this will be adopted.
Okay, thank you for this. And now to close up our traditional question: how do you see the evolution of ATM in 5 years, but also in 50 years, when we will both be retired, but maybe still observing it?
yeah. Let's hope we still have the opportunity to observe it. Yeah. So I'm not a visionary futurist by any means. So these are my personal views based mostly on gut feeling. So that should tell you how serious you should take it. Maybe just to start with AI. Yeah, that's a bit of the elephant in the room now. I'm changing my mind on AI from day to day, I feel. So I see a lot of potential. I also see a lot of hype. Yeah. I see it. I don't see it creeping into the controller working position anytime soon. I do see that AI is going to probably in the next 5 years take a huge role in decision support systems, pre-tactical decisions, whether it's runway planning, sector planning, flow control, these things. We at LVNL have made first steps at that, but I don't see it taking over the tactical control of the air traffic controller at the moment. And to be honest, not in the future necessarily. And then unmanned traffic systems. I think that's another thing that I also seem to change my mind on from time to time. I don't subscribe to the pipe dreams of pizzas being delivered on your doorstep by drones. Yeah, I have worked too long also on the aviation noise nuisance dossiers in the past to understand that this will be a nightmare if you have lousy machines dropping pizzas off at the doorstep. What I do see is that the whole energy put towards the development of the ATM system, I think, is very valuable. And I think it will pave the way for a new and highly automated ATM system, which in time, I think, will actually simply replace the current ATM system. I don't think in 50 years we will have ATCOs vectoring aircraft like we have today. So the role of the controller will undoubtedly change in a more supervisory role of monitoring an automated system, making decisions, keeping the human in the loop, allowing the human to break the loop or close the loop. And then, of course, it will then allow for other concepts like single piloted aircraft or optionally piloted aircraft or even personal air vehicles. Although even there, I'm a bit skeptic, especially from the social acceptance when it comes to noise. So I think this is sometimes maybe overlooked.
Yep. Indeed. Sebastian, thank you for
maybe as a last,
please go ahead.
And then as a last remark, I think in 50 years from now, not everybody would agree with me or would be happy with me stating this. I think there's not room for national ANSPs like we have it currently. So the airspace is very fragmented, and I would expect in 50 years from now, which is a long time, air traffic will be managed on a continental scale, if not global scale.
Yeah, I agree on that. I see a lot of political aspects into that and strategy and things like that. But that's probably a matter for another episode. So Sebastian, thank you for being our guest today, for taking the time and for sharing so many insights about your project at LVNL with TBS and also your general view on ATM.
Thank you, Vincent, for the opportunity to have me on your podcast, and hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Radar Contact. Visit foxatm.com or your favorite podcast platform for more episodes. Feel free to let us know if you or someone you know would like to share a topic with the air traffic management community. Frequency change is approved.